Today on Ag News Daily.
I'm excited for the opportunities just to learn and to be that young person to help others, to serve them. So, you know, I'm just trying to live my best life. You only get to live life once. And if you're not smiling and having fun, then what is it?
Well, welcome back to the Ag News Daily Show. This is our weekly edition of the old Ag News Daily podcast.
Old and new, all at the same time.
I love it. This is enjoyable for us because we love getting the news that you send us to report on. We appreciate the interaction that you have with us on social media, so continue to do that. We thank you for that.
We do, and we can interact with folks in person next week. If you're going to be at the Farm Progress Show, be sure to hit us up. We're going to be there live and in person and doing some recording ourselves. Maybe we can even have somebody on if they come hit us up for a little interview.
That's great. Well, so far the weather looks good this week. Dry conditions are continuing throughout the Midwest with increasing temperatures through the weekend. It is going to be warmer than normal temperatures that we have seen here in the northern part of the Midwest this past week. And those increasing temperatures are expected through the weekend. But there are a few chances of rain next week and for cooler temperatures. So that's good for the Farm Progress Show. Several areas within the Midwest region received 2 or more inches of rain in the past week, yet other parts remained dry. I'll say right here in central Iowa, Delaney, we were part of the dry category.
We are, but we're starting to see some crisp, cool mornings. So fall and harvest are right around the corner. And so as we look at one of the final crop progress reports this week, 97% of the corn crop has reached the silk growth stage. This was up from 94% the week prior and is on par with the 5-year average. 74% of the corn crop across all states has reached the dough growth stage, up from 60% the week prior and ahead of the 5-year average. As we take a look at the soybean crop, 95% of that crop has reached the bloom growth stage, up from 91% the week prior and on par with the 5-year average. 81% of soybeans have also reached the pod growth stage, up from 72% the week prior and ahead of the 5-year average. Taking a look at wheat, 96% of winter wheat has been harvested, up from 93% the week prior and ahead of the 5-year average. 31% of the spring wheat crop across the top 6 growing states has also been harvested. This was up from 18% the week prior, but behind the 5-year average of 36%. And Tanner, exciting news this week. We had the Pro Farmer Crop Tour, so we're starting to see some official yield counts come out from that tour as well.
That's right. It made its way from Ohio to Indiana and then from South Dakota to Nebraska along the Midwestern states this week. South Dakota and Ohio's corn yield estimates were reported lower than what scouts saw last year. So that's a little bit of a surprise, but these results are always interesting to take in. In South Dakota, ear count and kernels were lower than and were lower, and grain length was higher than last year. So the state's yield estimate was down compared to last year's tour of 156.51 bushels per acre. Soybeans saw some better results in the state with pod counts over 1,000. So that's factored in a 3x3 square. In Ohio, scouts say the yield was slightly lower than last year's record. They're estimating 183.29 bushels per acre. Ohio's soybeans also saw a decrease in pod counts by just under 2% at a little over 1,200 pods in their 3x3 square. Indiana and Nebraska both saw increases across the board in both their corn and soybeans. The Pro Farmer Crop Tour scouts reported that Indiana yield estimates of 187.54 and soybeans had pod counts over 1,400 pods in that 3x3 square. So very good estimates there coming for that state. Nebraska, the corn yield estimate was predicted to be up from 2023. Their estimate came in at 173.25. Soybean pod counts were higher just by 1% over last year at a little over 1,170 in that 3x3 square. Illinois yields reflected a 204 bushel average compared to a 193 from last year, and pod counts were up nearly 12%. The final two stops in the tour are the great state of Iowa, where all the good corn is, and Minnesota. Iowa corn yield estimates were up significantly from 2023. Last year, the scouts found the crop to be an average of 182.8. And this year, Delaney, they're predicting 192.7. Soybean pod counts were up 10%. to a little over 1,300 in that 3x3 square. Of course, Minnesota's crop tour is the last one to come to the table. Yields came in at 164.9, down significantly compared to 2023. Pod counts in the state averaged a little over 1,036 per square of that 3x3 measurement. But overall, we see there's probably going to be some large yields, and this tour has kind of confirmed a lot of suspicions.
Yeah, especially when you consider maybe states that are a little lower this year, like Minnesota. States like Iowa and Illinois have a big crop on hand, so it'll be interesting to see how that plays out in the markets. But the EPA this week finalized the first-of-its-kind strategy to protect 900 endangered species from herbicides. On August 20th, the agency released its final herbicide strategy, which has made improvements to the draft made available in July of 2023 after receiving lots of public comments reiterating the importance of protected listed species from herbicides, but also minimizing impact to farmers and other pesticide users, according to the EPA. The final strategy itself does not impose any requirements or restrictions on pesticide use. Rather, the EPA will use the strategy to inform mitigations for new active ingredient registrations and registration reviews of conventional herbicides. But in other news this week, the Minnesota Department of Agriculture is now beginning to accept applications for grants to help livestock producers combat the spread of avian influenza throughout the state's farm. The grant would allow producers to buy and install preventative equipment for their farms and operations, Tanner. So I think this is maybe the second or third state we've now seen do this. But up to $10,000 per farm could be awarded from the $500,000 grant that's part of the department's Agricultural Growth and Research Initiative through a 2024 legislative appropriation. This grant would reimburse farmers up to 80% of the costs of what would be needed to install on-farm installations such as HPPC, hazardous protection material, to prevent the avian influenza outbreak. 54 producers have already received the grant across various livestock species, but the deadline to apply goes through October 31st, Tanner.
Yeah, that's a big impact for those in Minnesota. There's been a lot happening where our crops get their resources, such as nitrogen, phosphate, and potash. Josh Linville, who is very well-versed on this topic, I saw his newsletter that came out yesterday. He's the vice president of fertilizer with StoneX, recently shared market expectations for volumes they will secure are all over the place as the global market is in the midst of another India urea purchase tender that he told reporters. He also says that the Chinese urea export continues well behind normal paces. We're talking currently that there are 219,000 exports from January until July, historically in a year where exports should be 5 to 5.5 million tons. This is leaving the global supplies, leaving a hole in the global supplies, which is probably going to boost prices. Overall, today, nitrogen values are largely in line with grain prices, which are lower, and that is in addition to lower farm income. He also says that the North American markets continue to struggle with some of the worst phosphate to grain ratios ever seen. It's raising demand questions. He predicts that some farmers will probably cut application rates where possible. Some farmers will cut phosphate completely, and some will even skip the fall run and wait to see what prices do in the spring. It's quite interesting. He also sent out a message yesterday that you're going to talk about next.
I am. That's because we've seen yet again another Canadian rail worker strike, Tanner, that could impact shipments of potash, phosphorus, and other nutrients, including grains as well. But negotiations continued throughout the week, but were unsuccessful to stop a work stoppage now in place for the CN and CP Canadian rail lines. The Teamsters Union is demanding better benefits, wages, and crew scheduling, which led to this now strike. With a combination of Canadian Pacific and Kansas City Southern, these are two of the largest railway systems that go through North America. This is the first time in Canadian history that both railroads have taken strike at the same time, which is why this is potentially going to be such a huge story, as they have a lot of bulk commodity exporters that run through both of those two lines, both here in Canada and in the United States, as a lot of the shipments and goods they're doing is not viable to send via truck for those long of distances. But late Thursday afternoon, Canadians' labor minister announced that under the authority of a Section 107 of the Canada Labor Code, he was directing the Canada Industrial Relations Board to assist both of these two parties in settling the potential negotiations here, Tanner. As we talked about earlier, this event could have major impact for the fertilizer market. Josh Linville once again shared that a couple of days to maybe a week won't have a huge impact on the fertilizer markets. However, much more than that, and we're likely going to be seeing inland values rise once again due to some of these tougher logistics and the market trying to establish what those new logistical routes are going to look like. So here are just a couple of maps we threw together pointing to the location of the Canadian nitrogen and potash production and potentially how that shakes out here for the markets.
Yeah, it's interesting to think about their transportation. They only really have one major interstate highway. Mm-hmm. So that's why trucking's not an option to be able to get things to where they need to go. It's not like you can put it on a truck. But the Democratic National Convention wrapped up this week also in Chicago. Ag was among the many issues that were discussed. The Harris-Waltz ticket released their 92-page platform document that provided an outlook for agriculture, taking over just one page to address ag specifically. However, there were other mentions of ag-adjacent topics, such as energy and the environmental impact, as well as other ag policies for the current administration. The platform document also outlays the pathway to citizenship for undocumented farm workers, to applauding what the Biden administration has done over the past 4 years, including an update to SNAP benefits. So there was a lot included in this 92-page document. The platform says, under President Biden's landmark climate law, the Ag Department is paying farmers to adopt climate-smart practices, which sequester carbon from the atmosphere and improve soil health and biodiversity and restore water cycles, all while opening new revenue streams and ecosystems for service markets. This is referring to a $3.1 billion Climate Smart Initiative and the platform that continues to brag, saying over 80,000 farms and 75 million acres have already adopted these practices. Another mention of the platform related to agriculture is a call to increase clean energy by adding 500 million solar panels and 60,000 wind turbines in that same category. The platform also calls for a more inclusivity in rural and tribal communities by calling for sustainable and resilient energy grids. So it was interesting to see they also are pushing for a climate neutral agricultural community by 2050.
Seems like a long way away, but not really when you think about that.
Excited to share with you one of the new team members of the Ag News Daily Show. So we're going to get into that introduction right now.
Well, folks, we're super excited today to bring a new face to the Ag News Daily podcast, officially joined by Michelle Stangler. Tanner, another person for you to be able to pick on me with.
You know, it seems like whenever we get additional team members, they very quickly take my side over yours.
Well, whatever. Michelle, welcome. We're super excited to have you with us next week at Farm Progress Show and on the Ag News Daily team officially now.
Yeah, I'm happy to be here.
So, Michelle, give us a little background into who Michelle Stangler is.
Well, I am someone who loves to be positive. I grew up on a small dairy farm in Wisconsin, and I have always loved my family and agriculture. And from there, I took a gap year. I served as a Wisconsin FFA state officer, and then just graduated in May from UW River Falls in Wisconsin with a Bachelor's of Science in Journalism and Agricultural Marketing Communications and a minor in agricultural business. And since then, I've had a lot of internships. I've traveled in marketing and communications and journalism. So from podcasting to having something of my own called Positivity in Ag, to traveling to Europe this spring. So it's just, there's a lot of who makes me, but in a nutshell, I just like to be that positive person. I just like to have a good time, and anything agriculture, I love to report on.
I think you hired her to replace me.
Maybe.
She's definitely got,
she's got better credentials than you. Yeah,
absolutely. It's a good thing you didn't ask for my resume.
Oh, well, you know,
probably
we still
would have been severely disappointed. So tell us a little bit about the dairy farm that you came from.
Yeah, so there we had 50 cows. We milked in a tie stall barn. Didn't even have automatic takeoff. So that's just something to show that we still farmed up until 2018 and 2019. By the time we sold, we had half red and white Holsteins and a few crossbreds between brown Swiss, which were part of my motivation to my dad, just to try to get his help. I helped in that regard, and I always loved to show. I showed at my county fair, and just a lot of that kind of influenced me to be involved in agriculture. Two older sisters, they love agriculture, but didn't go into it in the future in their career. So I learned so much there. Fed calves, milked cows, and just it was a fun family small dairy farm, which is here in Wisconsin. Our average herd size is just around 220, and so we have a lot of family farms, and still something very important to me as well.
I think I'm sure your family has a story too to go behind that transition, but just respect for the people in the dairy industry, because it is a tough business to be in, from the grueling hours. You know, you never get a vacation, to just the tight profit margins that dairy farmers go through year in and year out. So I bet that adds a little bit of character to your background as well, to say the least, Michelle. But like you mentioned, you've been really involved in the dairy industry your entire life, and you've got a lot of interesting perspectives when it comes to the dairy industry, something Tanner and I really don't have a lot of background in, outside of maybe just what we've researched and read for ourselves. But as you look at the dairy industry today, tell us about some of the interactions, or maybe the things that you watch day to day being up there in the state of Wisconsin.
Well, there's a lot of things that I love to talk about when it comes to cows. I was interning in Missouri this summer, and they're not a huge dairy state. I was thankful for that experience with Brownfield Ag News, and I thought it was just so cool just to still interact with some of those dairy checkoff organizations in Missouri. But in Wisconsin, I right now, you know, H5N1, that's something that I still want. But also, you know, how can farmers make still an income with some of their other side businesses? So whether it may be a creamery, or whether it may be something to add to their portfolio. In Wisconsin specifically, what's really cool is that 90% of our milk goes into cheese, and 90% of that cheese gets exported beyond Wisconsin's borders. And so that's something I really love to see, is that I love to entertain friends and family with charcuterie boards. So cheese and sausage and wine, that's something. But some other issues are just, you know, right now with what's happening with the hearing at the national level, like just, you know, how will that affect farmers' prices? I always find that interesting, and how beef and dairy is just a top of mind, as you know, as you look at a bull calf today of what's getting worth compared to 5 years ago. It's just super interesting how much you know, an Angus calf is going compared to a Holstein calf. So those are some interesting things that are happening.
What I'm hearing is Michelle's going to bring a charcuterie board for us next week at the Farm Progress Show.
At least cheese curds.
You know, I would definitely bring cheese curds. Maybe a charcuterie board one day. I have these, like, I lived in Idaho last summer for a few months, and so I have an Idaho cheese board and a Wisconsin cheese board that looks like the state. So maybe I'll have to get some other states too.
You'll have to get an Iowa one. I'm
exactly.
Sure there will be a booth. Uh-huh. It was interesting. We had a listener tag us on X yesterday, talking about how great milk prices have been, and it's a strange anomaly right now in the ag sector. Most markets are continuing to tumble, but we've seen milk and cheese contracts trade at 10 times the level they used to. So it's interesting right now to see where that's going. And he tied that back to a little bit of the butterfat into the oil market and where that's driving the demand. So quite interesting there. But as you get ready to come hang out with us at Farm Progress Show, what are you most excited to see?
That's a big one. Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely looking forward to seeing you all in person and spend some time. But I think what I'm most looking forward to is just seeing all the ag technology and just agriculture coming together. I've been to the Farm Progress Show once before in a communications hat, and so now I'm excited to report on it in this way in journalism. And so just the technology, the people that comes together, and just all the different people, the people who go as farmers. I'm excited just to have conversations with them, and seeing all the big technology, all the tractors, how they're serving farmers is what I'm really looking forward to.
Yeah, well, we're excited to have you on some interviews with us next week and help us record the show next week as well. Michelle, as you look beyond the Farm Progress Show, I know you and I have had some conversations about maybe other events or topics that you hope to help us cover here on the Ag News Daily Podcast. Dairy, of course, being a big one there. When you go to look for stories, because I know you also have a podcast that you use to share and tell stories of agriculture, what kind of things are you looking for? And maybe what are some things our listeners will be able to see that you bring to the table for us?
I think some really cool stories that I love reporting on are the family farm. What are they doing to continue to be relevant and sustainable in these next 5-10 years with their kids? How are they making that transition? Those are some really cool stories I love doing. I like to go to events. What are some top of mind things that are happening at those meetings? Those are pretty cool. And then for my podcast and my focus is that I love talking to young people in agriculture. And I think there is that gap where, you know, in college and even in high school and as a young adult, you don't know really what you're doing. I mean, I'm still trying to understand what I'm doing. And so providing them resources and opportunities. So whether it may be another perspective on someone else, how they manage their investments, to another person talking about how they really encourage the next generation, what ways do you manage them and not manage, but support them. And so those are just some fun topics I love to talk about. I love a lot of the fluffy stories where how is someone doing something? And it may not be news, but I think that's what was relatable. And that's what the stuff I love to think about too. So those are some cool stories. And I love to listen. I love to hear what other people's opinions are. So if they ever have a story, I'd love to hear it.
Well, don't feel bad because Delaney still doesn't know what she's doing either.
About you?
I'm good. I got it figured
okay,
out.
Okay. Well, I mean, that is probably a realistic thing, right? Like, you get out of college, you're fresh out of college. I don't think anybody really knows what they want to do, or if they do, it might change a few times even then. But tell us a little bit more about your podcast, Positivity in Ag.
Yeah, so something I created a few years ago, and I right now have like 74-minute episodes. That's where I'm trying to kind of hit, is that, you know, it's digestible and it's something that you can easily binge worthy, I guess you could say. And then really hitting on that audience of young adults, so 18 to 26 year olds. So it's something I really looked into this past year and something I'm looking at editing some interviews I did in Europe. I did 20 to 30 in 11 countries and nations. And so that's the priority this fall, is just to continue to edit those and push those videos out as well. And so it's something that it's a labor of love and something I'm going to carry forward here soon and pick up. There's just been a lot of life that's happened. Last year, I had a professor that unexpectedly passed away, and it's something that I really just needed to take some time on myself and to reflect upon that experience. But I'm looking forward to getting back into it, and something I really, you know, learned a lot about earlier this year, making a business plan and talking with some people at my university. And so it's just something I love to do, is just to hear people's whys and hows. And I think it's just relatable content for those young people in agriculture. So I love it. And you'll have to watch out more on YouTube and Instagram. Those are my main platforms.
I love that. But what does Michelle want to be when she grows up?
That's a big question. I think right now in this season of my life, I love just being with my family. I have an 8-9-month-old niece, Eleanor, and she's the cutest thing. And so I really right now want to have a balance between my family, my friends, and then some of my career passions as well. But if I look like 10, 20 years down the line, it'd be cool to be an international agricultural journalist and to have a family. And so we'll see. I'm excited just for the opportunities just to learn and to be that young person to help others and to serve them. So, you know, I'm just trying to live my best life. You only get to live life once. And if you're not smiling and having fun, then what is it?
She's wise beyond her years, Tanner. She's got it figured out maybe better than we do right now.
Definitely so.
Well, Michelle, we appreciate you hopping on with us, being on the podcast. You get to edit this. That's the other thing people won't know, is, but you're behind the scenes as well, making sure all the content that goes out on social media is going to look really good. And So we thank you for that as well. But thank you again for joining us. We're looking forward to having you next week at the Farm Progress Show. And folks, if you want to meet Michelle in person, she'll be with us live and broadcasting. So that'll be all fun and exciting stuff next week, Michelle.
Yeah, I'm excited for it. And it should be a next great couple of months. So make sure to reach out if you have any ideas of what you want this podcast to continue to develop into or some stories. Just love to listen.
That's great. Thanks again for jumping on today.
Well, Tanner, our listeners will be, or viewers will be seeing Michelle next week with us at the Farm Progress Show. So it'll be excited to have her live and in person. But as we take a look to wrap up the show at markets, new crop corn has been struggling over the last week to find its footing, closing at $3.93 on Thursday. Weekly export sales came in above trade expectations, but did very little to excite the market. Following that bearish WASDE report and now the Pro Farmer Crop Tour reporting good yields, the corn market continues to remain bearish and doesn't have a lot to get excited about here. Soybeans are much of the same after dropping 20-plus cents on Thursday. Pro Farmers' potentially big yields seem to also weigh heavy on the markets, and export sales numbers were lackluster. While domestic demand has been strong in the crush market, that has not been enough to see any sort of long-term price support here for the commodity market, Tanner. So I think we're going to continue to see deflated prices here heading into harvest season, especially with those big yields we're probably going to see up across the country.
That's right. It'll be interesting to see everybody out at Farm Progress Show. Make sure you come say hi. But the tenor, I think, is going to be different. The emotion and probably a lot more searching for value. So it'll be exciting to report from there and let you listeners know that weren't able to attend what we see.
That's right, Tanner. But they can follow along with us on social media in case they're not going to be at Farm Progress Show and want to see the action. Follow along with us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok at AgNews Daily. But what do you say? We let the people go.
Let's let them go.